and roll. I got Sterling White back on the Capital Racer Show Season 3, brought to you by PitchDex.com, man. How's it going, my friend? Long time
man,
to talk.
A lot has gone since the last time we spoke. Man, it has been, it seems, 4 or 5 years since we last
Not
spoke.
Quite that long, but it's been a bit. So let's refresh the audience's memory and tell them how you got into syndication and real estate investing. How about
that? So one upbringing, if you haven't already, go back to episode 56 because I go into my story on that. But yeah, humble beginnings, almost lost my life several times due to just gang related activity that was going on outside where I lived and stray bullets just flying around and almost got hit by several. So, but ended up luckily getting out of that environment and got into real estate. This was 19, 20 years old, where I started as a laborer in the construction side, read the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which very many people are familiar with that. And a light bulb went off to be more of a actual investor. So about 150 single families. And then in 2017, that's when I made the shift to buying multifamily and got close to about 500 units.
Wow. Okay. So talk to me about your podcast, because I know you had Grant Cardone on there a long time ago. What's been going on with your podcast? What do you talk about on there?
GC. So it's the real estate experience, and it just talks about my personal journey. And then also oftentimes, which I haven't done as much, is bring on other investors that are in the syndication space to really share their stories. But primarily it's me just showing the good, the bad, the ugly, trials and tribulations that come along with operating and raising capital for deals.
I think I was a guest on there. I don't know when that was, but I was still at my old company. I was working at Bakerson, raising capital for them, helping them with heavy lift syndications. And as a result of starting the show, I was like, geez, I wonder if I can put all these capital raisers and these fund managers, in some cases syndicators, together. And the overwhelming response from attorneys that I was interviewing was like, dude, you have to start your own fund in order to do that and stay legally compliant. So I went off and partnered with the fund manager. And now we're doing a bunch of crazy build to rent subdivisions in the Southeast. So it's been a crazy ride. Actually, today, as we're recording, this probably won't be released for a couple of years, but or a couple months.
I was like, whoa, all right, you're that far booked out.
I'm pretty booked up. But what I wanted to say was that today is my anniversary, the 3-year anniversary of the Capital Raiser Show. We're approaching 1 million downloads. It's been a crazy ride, starting from nothing to now I'm a fund manager. So
congrats.
Thank you for being on my show on my anniversary, dude. This is pretty cool.
Small world. Well, I appreciate it being on.
I want to know a little bit more about the show. When did you start it? How many episodes have you done?
Yeah, so I'm about around 180 or so plus, and started it two and a half years ago. And I've gone back and forth between doing the podcast and also YouTube. And more so, I just leverage the content on YouTube and then put it on the podcast. So it's been a great journey. And it's one of those things that I've always found interesting. And maybe, Ruben, you've had this happen where I'll go to a conference and people will finish my sentences. It's a little weird, but when I tell my story and then just in general, they finish my sentences and they're just so used to hearing my voice. But that really goes to show you the power of podcasts.
So Vertical Street Ventures had a conference here in Phoenix a couple months ago. And I was like drinking a beer, hanging out with some investors, some syndicators, and somebody heard me laughing and they came up to me and they're just like, dude, I recognize your laugh. You're a podcast host. I'm like, that's right. And I couldn't believe that somebody picked me out of the audience that had no idea what I looked like just from my laugh. So that was very enlightening to know that that kind of pull is available to you when you do a podcast, right? So it's always cool. So I started a thought leadership platform in 2009, I guess, 2008, which was just a YouTube channel. And I remember learning that people are like, I feel like I know you already before they actually ever met you. It's kind of like that with the podcast. People are like, oh, I know that you've traveled to Brazil. I've known that you've done this and that. And now you're doing build to rent. And it's just from the show. So
And that opens the doors, especially when you're raising capital for deals and you're bringing on investors, is that people do business with who they like, know, and trust. And that's one really good way for you to build the trust in the relationship with someone and to really bridge the gap for them to actually invest with you, because they've been along for the journey. And now if they reach out to you, many of the times is they've gone down the rabbit hole of your actual content. And that's why they reached out to you, because there's just something about you, your story, which whatever it is, that really resonated with them.
Fantastic. Tell me about the business model that you are currently doing. What are you investing in? What parts of the country?
Yeah, so primarily in the Midwest, and now out here, Houston, Texas. So really? I like to say Texas like that with the Southern too. Accent. I wish I had my cowboy boots and hat on, but that'd be a little bit too much for the podcast. So yeah, I actually moved out here. Last we had spoke, I was back in Indianapolis. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So are you playing Texas Hold'em poker?
No, I don't know how to play. It's been a while. I should play that, or I should go doing, what is the Texas dance? But I would say one of the things, the only disappointment I've had about moving out here, they say everything is bigger in Texas, except the toilet I have is the same size as the ones back home. So I think I just have a defective toilet.
Hilarious. I think they think that they're their own country sometimes. Everything's a little bit more expensive. People like to drive around in huge vehicles, big like lifted trucks and stuff. And then like all of their whatever merchandise or brand, like Bud Light has a star or the symbol of Texas on it. So they have all this Texas branding on everything, Texas Fords, Texas Chevrolets. And it's pretty fun, man. I love Texas. Y'all should go out there if you ever
have a chance. There it is. You said the y'all. Nice. I like how you just threw that in there.
Yeah, dude, I learned how to play. I lived in San Antonio with my friend for about 45 days, and he taught me how to play Texas Hold'em. It was a lot of fun. I won a couple of big pots. There was usually a $40 buy-in, but we would watch Thursday night football and play, and it was just an absolute blast, man.
Did you go to the Alamo?
I went to the Alamo. I was in San Antonio for 45 days, so I think I went there and Natural Bridge Caverns and a couple other places downtown, rode on the ferry or whatever they things to go through the river down there. It was a lot of fun, man. I love Texas. So one of these days I'm gonna have to invest in another deal down there, because I've only taken down one as very tiny fractional share owner of a, I think it was a 242 unit Timberwalk with the Lone Star Capital Group and Rob Beardsley. So, hey, man, next time you have a deal down in Texas, you should let us know, man. We like Texas. Hey,
there we go.
So what kind of
deals?
Yeah,
so
yeah, deals.
Have shifted more to B class. So after a 1980s built, previously would be 1970s built. And with that is the most recent deal, which is 156 unit, bought it for $6.2 million. And this is in Indianapolis, so very affordable, and putting $2 million into it. And also there's quite a bit of ongoing deferred maintenance and actually getting a really good exit price on that. But what I'm saying is that shifting from more of those heavy lifting projects to the ones that are more stable and have less deferred maintenance ongoing.
Okay, so am I correct in saying that you've been recycling some of the money from your previous deals? I think you said before the show started that you're selling some of your previous syndications.
Yeah, have sold them and
talk,
just
talk
have
to me about that.
Yeah, so just have one more left, and actually received 2 years into the project, received $1 million more, or receiving $1 million more than our 5-year projections. And that's a pretty big swing, especially on that size of a deal. So prepping for having some dry powder available for when the market, I believe, starts to turn, which I have started to see a shift in the market, especially with the rising interest rates, quite a bit of uncertainty. Powell recently in one of his meetings said, hey, there's more pain to come, which housing prices are still high. And his objective is to basically crash markets overall, not necessarily crash, but bring them down.
So talk to me about the effect that it's having on your business. Is it harder to find deals? Is it harder to get capital? What's been your experience?
The capital isn't the issue. It's the finding deals. And it's just not penciling out. So right now I've pretty much put a hold on acquisitions and just selling at the moment.
What I've seen a lot is people are leaving the value add space and going into sub niches like development or senior assisted housing or heavy lift. Or
I've seen some people do ground up construction.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. We're not building vertical multifamily, but we essentially are building a version of multifamily. It's just horizontal detached multifamily, right? So a bunch of little 1,200 square foot houses, all managed exactly the same way a multifamily is. So we're seeing a lot of traction in the development space, not just for our build to rent, but we're seeing other vertical developers that are building like four-story garden that are having a lot of success. I think there's a little bit more control and a little bit less competition. So it's been quite a journey, man, trying to learn this whole thing called development.
And so, my question for you, Ruben, is that going is, how do you protect your downside on that? Because wouldn't you say quite a bit, or even in China, quite a bit of these developers is the rug just got pulled from underneath them. And how now so? They've just got, well, I don't want to go too much into it. It may get into politics, but is basically is they run out of funding. So some people, you had homeowners that pre-bought the properties and then the developers ran out of money. So now it's potentially that the government's going to bail out, and who knows how that's going. And that's why they're saying there's a crash going to, but is the developers actually don't have enough money to finish those products to then give it to the homeowners. And some of them have actually been living in the houses that are unfinished. So that's what I'm saying is, how do you protect your downside? Is if you have multiple of these, would you be able to shift them to market if you can't sell it?
That's a fantastic question. And it's not quite like that for us.
Okay.
For single family developers that are selling these houses to retail buyers, I think there is a lot of problems going on in that space. But what we actually do is we take these houses, we don't sell them, we rent them out, and then the entire subdivision we sell off to an institution which loves buying these huge assets that are a bunch of individual detached houses that are getting
like American Homes for Rent as an example.
It's fantastic. But yes, the developers that are trying to sell to individual retail buyers are struggling right now, because right now there's a cooling off of house buyers. So like in Phoenix, I'll give you an example. We don't invest here at the moment, but I've seen some statistics here that before the interest rate correction, there was like 4,000 homes available on the MLS here in town. And currently, a few months, maybe about 4.5 months later, there's 15,000 houses, one of the biggest corrections in Phoenix history. Wow. And like, why would somebody want to buy a house right now if they can just wait 6 months and buy it for $50,000 less?
Yeah.
So there is a cooling off period, but where are these people going to live if they want to be in a home but are tired of living in an apartment? Well, they're going to go to one of our built to rent communities, which is going to increase the demand for housing in those subdivisions, which is going to increase the net operating income on the entire subdivision. That's going to make it even more appealing for these institutional buyers to take one of these things down. And this is kind of like why we like development right now, at least in our existing model. I don't want to hog the show, so let's kind of talk about you're slowing down on acquisition. So one of the things that I've noticed, even going back to like my early days, is that if you can't pivot, adapt, and evolve quick enough, you can kind of end up back in corporate America or something else. So do you see this as one of those opportunities right now for you to adapt your strategy, to change it? Do you think that you will make some moves? Have you had to go through any kind of evolutions here to stay on par and make money for your investors? Tell me about that.
Primarily, one of the things that my partner ended up doing, but I didn't want to go down that way, is raising capital for other deals, which there's nothing wrong with that model. But I primarily wanted to focus on our own, and primarily my own deals are our own at that time. So on the side of pivoting is, one, just stabilizing the current properties and assets and then selling those. And then as the market start to shift, is essentially is have that dry powder available and ready to then deploy into those deals. But outside of that, been focusing more time on actually additional self-improvement from traveling, learning new languages, philosophy, going out and networking. Yeah, all these different, especially on the philosophy side, have really taken quite a bit of rabbit holes. So yeah, I've been having more time to do things such as that and just think.
That's cool. So tell me about this philosophy that you've been studying. Who are you studying?
There's multiple philosophies, but primarily the Marcus Aurelius's, the Seneca's, the Epictetus's, and it's under the umbrella of Stoicism. Marcus Aurelius, if you're not familiar with him, is at one point in time, he was the I would say most important person on the planet is. He was running an empire, and reading his book, The Meditations, is basically his thoughts that he had as he was in that situation. But is it really goes into that this is hundreds of years ago of a lot of the problems that he was going through in his position are pretty much the same that we experience today. Of course, we've had differences, technological advances, but at its core, us as humans is pretty much still the same.
Fascinating. Okay, so I got to ask you about this, man. I think I have that in my Kindle. So I have Meditations, whatever it's called, by Marcus Aurelius. I haven't read it, but I'm very curious about it because another friend of mine, Dustin Hendrickson, told me that he read that book and it was life-changing for him. That's like one of his go-to books. So I'm curious about this particular thing I'm going to bring up here in a second is I know that you like to study philosophy and the mind and personal empowerment and self-development and peak performance and that type of stuff, which I really admire about you. And I'm kind of the same way. We're going to be doing a webinar about unlocking the syndicator subconscious. A lot of people talk about this across the field of gurus around the planet, but very few of them actually talk about mindset as it pertains to real estate other than, you know, like you need to have a strong mindset, but they don't really talk about subconscious or superconscious or peak performance unless you have like a specialized coach. Tell me, like, how important is it to study the subconscious and or peak performance if you are going to participate in syndicating multifamily or other commercial real estate?
I don't know so much on the peak performance and all that, but is I would say from the psychology side, that does help in how people from how they think about things and actually what would get them to take action, such as one, let's just think of it as an example of from the psychology of many people, they don't want what others don't want. Or if they see if you're at a restaurant and there's a ton of people at that restaurant, then they're more likely to actually go there because you've got social proof versus if there's not very many people that are there, then people will get turned off on that because they'll just think it's not a good restaurant. So that's what I would say is study more of that from a psychology because that helps in the marketing side. And some people may think that, oh, you're just manipulating people or from that is it's all sales. And podcasting in itself is a way of marketing and really building that trust and that bond with other people. So that's what I've studied more of is the actual psychology piece and how that works for you as a capital raiser is if you can understand and put yourself in, let's say, the investor's shoes that you're bringing on to then invest with you so you can invest in other deals, then in that case is you'll know how to market and present yourself to where they'll like, trust, know, and decide to move forward with you.
All right. So I remember watching a video of you had been to one of your properties and your daughter was there and you're shooting some videos of her like dancing around, jumping. And are you still teaching her real estate or bringing her around the deals that you do to kind of plant a seed with her?
So she's more in taking a different. So no, she's not as involved on that. She's got her hands full with soccer, school, and all of those day to day. I do need to get more involved with the actual teachings, but pretty much had her hands full with everything else.
Yeah, I remember my dad used to take me in his truck to pick up rent at some of the properties that he had, just little single family. And it left a huge impression on me. Like, this is what grown men are supposed to do, or at least that's what I thought back when I was a kid. I was like, oh, we got to be real estate investors.
So, okay, not collecting rent, because that is hopefully you would hire someone on your team to be the one that goes out and collects the rent or set up a system to where the tenant actually sends it to you via online methods. But that's another conversation itself.
Right. So it's kind of like that rich dad, poor dad conversation where like open your mind to leveraging other people. And then, you know, we find out about this thing called multifamily syndication, which allows us to hire a bunch of people to do all these things for us, which a lot of single family investors, they have to kind of own a self-employed business instead of being a business owner, like the ESBI quadrant and that kind of stuff.
And I just had this conversation with someone just right before this podcast is that exact thing is people quit a job to then give themselves another job and actually be the technician. So the one that has to be the one to operate the business because they're working in the business versus taking the business owner approach and working on the business.
Okay. Talk to us about where do you want to invest? I think you mentioned B-class assets. You're not doing some of the older buildings anymore. So probably 80s and newer in Houston, mm-hmm. in Texas, or what parts of the country do you want to invest?
Yeah, so here in Houston, Texas, always got to say it like that because it's in my backyard. And then also still based in Indianapolis, or still buying properties in Indianapolis, Indiana, also Louisville or Louisville or Louisville, however you want to pronounce that. And then also other markets within Ohio, Cincinnati, Columbus, and then Kansas City, Missouri. So sticking in that Midwest because you get good cash flow. Love here in Houston because you get the best of both worlds when it comes to cash flow and then also appreciation.
Okay, I keep on forgetting to bring this up. The avatar that listens to the show is the scaling or aspiring multifamily syndicator / capital raiser. And I kind of want to talk about this because we brought a couple younger people onto our team and they're wanting to make money very fast.
That's a red flag, but yeah.
No, I'm just saying these younger individuals don't have a timeline that they can kind of understand as to how long it takes to actually start earning from a syndication. And I see this even people from that are outside of my company. They're very impatient. They're young. They live in today's society, which is very, you know,
the microwave age.
So they want money real fast. But the reality is it takes some time. Like you have to go full cycle. Acquisitions fees in built and development, or they take a little bit longer to get because some of the lending products are kind of moving and shifting on you. But for the average person that wants to, and I think this is a great question for you because you've gone through these cycles, you're about to sell a couple of properties and then take big chunks of dry powder, as you put it, and invest it into and redeploy it into new assets. How long did it take you to do this? What can the scaling syndicator expect before they can actually retire from their job or before they start making money? What do you think? I know that's kind of an odd question that can't be completely answered, but just from your experience, what has your experience been?
Yeah, and this is so common of the impatience, as you mentioned, even with people who are a little bit older, because especially when they're on social media, they're seeing all these people close on deals and just... when it comes to that, trying to keep up with the Joneses, for lack of better words. But yep. I would say it really varies upon someone's skill set. But I would say realistically, to set an expectation anywhere between a year, year and a half before you actually get paid or even to that first deal. And I'm referring on the syndication side, to where you would get, let's say, the acquisition fee that you could make up front. And then if you got your ongoing equity, you've got that through the distributions. And then when you actually go and sell the property, that could be 3-5 years away from that period too. So I would say to someone, myself, is I've always been a minimalist. So that's one thing that's always helped with me, is my overhead's always been small. Also is I've had that patience mentality, is I just know that if I keep putting in the work day to day, that at some point is I will get to where I want to get. But I would say minimally is to have the expectation of, especially when you're doing syndications, is a year, year and a half. But you've got to be putting in the work day in and day out. It can't be one of those things, from my personal experience, that you do part time.
Yeah, I think we get very inspired, particularly like one of my favorite kind of interviews is the 22-year-old kid that took down 100 units, and like other people see them, they're like, how did this kid just syndicate 100 units on their first deal? And typically it's because they're partnering with somebody that's got a great deal of experience, but they see this and think, oh, this is, let's get rich quick kind of thing. And the reality is that you have to be able to embrace not having any capital, regardless of what industry you're in real estate. It might be 6 months or a year before you see money, guys. And I think people just don't realize that. And like for me, like, I know that we're eventually going to make a bunch of money and we're going to make our investors a bunch of money, but development takes a long time. So be prepared to hold on tight with your finances and figure out something to keep you alive for the first 24 months. It may be quicker, it may be slower, but don't be expecting a bunch of money to keep you alive during those first couple of years. Eventually you will do very well, because it's not a lot of people that are in this business, and the people that become good at it or partner with people that are good at it eventually do very well, but you have to have some patience. So that was just my message to the audience, guys. For those that are just tuning in for maybe the beginning days of your journey into syndication, be prepared to wait before you make money, but partner with some good people and eventually you'll do just fine.
Yeah. And those, let's say someone, the 22-year-old, 23-year-old closes in 6 months or a year, that is a exception to the rule. That's an anomaly. And as you mentioned, let's say it's a social media post. A lot of times they don't post the full story or the day in, the sacrifices, everything that went, that came into that. So we're just sharing the reality of actually what does come with it. So, and you wouldn't want to be short-minded, because if you do, okay, I got to get into this industry. And that's what I mentioned earlier when you said make money fast. I said red flag, because you'll look for shortcuts in order to get within that 6 months, and it'll end up costing you in the long run, which here in real estate, especially investing, is that relationships and your reputation is everything.
100%. This is so good. All right. So did you bring your entire family to Houston out of curiosity?
No, it's just myself out here. I've got my sister and also a niece and nephew, but daughter's back home. And then also her mother is there too.
Okay, cool. And then are you finding it? What brought you to Texas? Because you wanted to do deals there specifically. So you wanted to be like a boots on the ground kind of thing, or tell me about that.
So I was feeling complacent in Indianapolis, and this was right in the midst of COVID where I actually made that decision. So there was a mental slump that was going on. And there was just this thought that I've always had my biggest breakthroughs in life is when I really just changed my environment and done something completely a 180. And for some reason, this thought came to my mind, why not move? And all this fear started settling in. All your family's here, this. And then when I've leaned into that fear, that's where I've really been able to propel myself. So I was looking at Tampa, Austin, and then here in Houston. And Houston just made the most sense out of those.
I've never been to Houston. What do you like?
I had never either.
Wow.
It was just something about it, and glad I made the move. I would say transparent, the first month or so, likely I was in depression, or a month and a half, because it was a lot. I didn't realize until I was actually talking with a colleague of mine, an associate, and they said that was a big move, and I didn't realize it. But then as I started getting more into the culture and everything, and I drive past the main city, I'm like, I'm so glad I made that move, or made the move.
That's so cool. Talk to us a little bit about capital raising. What have you been doing that's successful, or what have you done to be successful up to now? And gear this to the person that's looking to raise capital or co-GP or eventually get to the next level up.
Building a brand. It starts with that. Whether you know it or not, is you do have a brand. If you don't have a brand, that is your actual brand. So just starting there. And the place I started was actually on biggerpockets.com. Not affiliated or anything. It's a free to sign up. It's a great place for you to network, provide value to others. And from that is that's where you start to get your name out there and start to attract people that would likely be interested in investing in deals. So that's just a good way for you to get yourself out there and your messaging, and then tell your story. So that's really the foundation. And then once you get a few investors, you have great success, you start to get a track record, then the rest will just start to snowball from there.
Tell us a little bit more about the branding. Somebody is looking to get into syndication. What do they need to do to create a good brand? Do they need to put pictures of buildings on their website, or does it need to be emotional and kind of like pictures of vacations with your family and financial freedom and time freedom? What kind of things do you put on there so that you can stand out?
Yeah, so that's a great point. From a tactical, I would say, is just going to Bigger Pockets. I would actually start there and be in the actual forums and providing value to others who are there. And someone who is just getting started, is you can provide to help to someone who is actually before where you are. So I would start there, and then you can actually reach out to people who are in your backyard and start to network with them, and then take it from online to now offline and start to build those relationships, because it's all relationship based. And that person may not be an investor for you then and there, but things could change in the future where, let's say, they're an active investor, but then they come across some cash for selling a deal, and then now they need to deploy that and they want to be more passive because they don't want to do the active anymore. Or that they know someone and they say, man, this person I just met, they were actually a great guy. You actually should start investing with them. So that's what I would say from leveraging a platform such as BiggerPockets. And then when it comes to social media, is just telling your story and documenting your journey is what I've found that does work. Then when you start to build traction from there, that's when you can go on others' podcasts to be of value, such as what I'm doing here and what Ruben does on other podcasts, to now tap into others' audiences. So you're using all of this as a way to start to build your brand.
Okay, so you mentioned one of your previous partners was going off to raise capital for other sponsors. Did you look at what kind of money he would make as a capital raiser, co-GP, or person working with other people? I don't know if he was going to do it through a fund or if he was going to co-GP or what his structure or mechanism was going to be. But I've noticed a couple of things that you make, at least in my business, I make a lot more money when I'm raising for my own deals and I'm raising for somebody else. Can you compare those two things?
You said making money on your own deals than for others?
Yeah. So like the syndications that I do where I'm the GP versus the syndications that I do where I'm the co-GP / capital raiser / fund manager. It's not that lucrative.
Oh yeah, agreed.
A 2% acquisition fee that you get a share of, and then you have ongoing duties and participation with them for the duration of the entire project. It doesn't seem like it's very lucrative to do that. So we're kind of moving away from raising capital for other people, although in the right circumstance, we might continue to do it, I think. What did you see?
That's why the model just wasn't that interesting to me, and I just didn't enjoy it. So that's why one of the primary reasons why we had a difference in visions with where to take the company. Because exactly what you alluded to is I'd rather put more effort into our own deals, and which it was starting to shift in the market too, where we weren't able to bring as much deals. So, but just to go full circle on your question is that it's not even close of what we made on our own deals versus doing a carve out and being a co-GP on others.
Okay, cool, man. All right, man, let's jump into the lightning round. I've taken you through this once before, and I might ask you some of the same questions, but let's see if we get the same or different answers. We'll start with this. Best vacation you've ever taken?
To Dubai. And I wouldn't consider it a vacation, or what is a vacation? But is that's what I would say. I still worked while I was there. I would say it was a very memorable travel that I had. And I had the worst jet lag ever. I could not. Yeah, it was 2 a.m., 4 a.m. there. And I was just wide awake. I could not just sleep. It was the worst ever. But I still enjoyed it.
All right. Favorite book of any kind?
Shoe Dog by Phil Knight, the founder of Nike.
Oh,
co-founder.
I'll have to check that out. Tell me the craziest thing you've seen during your travels.
One that I had when I was in Guadalajara is
nice.
Just the craziest thing was I was going up, it's a hike. And within the hike is you're climbing up railroad tracks. And it was one of the most challenging things that I've ever done. And it got to a point where it got so elevated is you couldn't walk up it because you would blow out or you would tire out your quad. So you actually had to crawl up. But is wow. I would say it got to a point of crazy is that some of the gaps in between were missing within the railroad tracks that go up. So if you would have fell or anything is you're going to break something. So that's what I would say is the craziest thing that I experienced.
All right, let's see if I can catch you off guard with this. Favorite childhood memory?
I would say quite a bit of moments I had with my grandma. She was, I would say, the most beautiful person ever that has been in my life. And it's so unfortunate that I ended up losing her at a young age. But I remember vividly is being in our house, both my brother and I. This was during Halloween. We had on our Christmas or Halloween toys. And I just remember her giving us our gifts. And so that's what I would say is my best memory of her.
Love it. That's beautiful. How about this? What do you love best about being a father?
Being able to share my experiences that I've had in life with someone who will be able to learn from those. And then also that my daughter looks very similar to me. And it's very weird that I'm looking in the mirror at someone, and not that she looks like a dude, but somewhat a dude, but is a pretty dude, if you were to say. Just imagine me with a full head of hair down to my back like Tarzan. That is her.
Wow. Okay. Do you have any hacks for breaking through limiting beliefs?
I would say putting yourself around others that are further along or who are where you wish to be. So just figure out a way to put yourself in that environment.
That is a huge key for sure. Do your spiritual philosophies have anything to do with your success in business?
There has to be some platform of, yes, and how I've been able to view the world and when it comes to the universe. So yeah, I would say.
All right, what do you love about playing paintball?
Man, it's intense. And what I mean by that, it's just a lot of chaos that is going on. And for me is I like to control my environment quite a bit, but of course there's some things we can't control and not control. But really in that environment, there's just a lot that is going on where you've got one person or multiple people around you. You got people shooting at you and you've got the teamwork saying, okay, you're going to go rush. Okay, I got you. I got your cover fire. So, but just recently I got shot in the neck and then also right in the groin. And then It's right above the groin, right above. Next time I'll actually look to buy a cup. I just really enjoy the teamwork.
Very cool. All right, here's my trademark question. Have you ever experienced a miracle or had a near-death experience?
Yeah, when I was 5 years old and almost lost my life due to that stray bullet.
That's crazy. Yeah, if you guys want to hear about that, listen to episode 56 of the Capital Racer Show. We go into that. All right, last question brought to you by Shanna Amigo, one of our great listeners. She would like to know, what impact would you like to leave in the world?
The main impact I would is there, I would say, multiple kids out there that's in the same environment that I grew up in, is a parent that is one moment they are the happiest on the planet, literally the next minute they're the complete opposite. So coming from that type of environment, so that with a single parent, and then also not knowing if you were going to live to the next day, and that, hey, this is the path that I took. You don't have to take the common path and actually be another statistic. So I really want to be an ideal in the message for the kid or multiple kids in that environment that, hey, there is a way out.
Boom. Great answers on the lightning round. I love that part of the show. Shout out to the Capital Raiser Nation. Thanks for tuning in. Please leave us a 5-star written review. Shout out to Legacy Acquisitions and to our sponsors, Good Egg Investment, Syndication Pro, Apartment Educators, The Family Office Club, and PitchDecks.com. Go to thecapitalraisershow.com to see all of our sponsors' deals. Man, Sterling, how does the audience get a hold of you, my friend?
Yeah, so one is sterlingwhiteofficial.com. That is sterlingwhiteofficial.com. And then also I'm on YouTube. Just type in Sterling White. Look for a bald, handsome guy that'll come right on up. And there we go.
Cool. What kind of content are you putting out on YouTube?
Talk about real estate. I talk about traveling and life and just share my personal story. As mentioned, the good, the bad, and the ugly, just like the movie, which I need to give a rewatch on that at some point.
That's fantastic. All right, man. Any last words of wisdom for the aspiring syndicator or capital raiser as they scale on their journey?
I would say patience. And of course, that is easier said than done. But as long as you have faith in yourself and you put in the work day in and day out and you don't give up, there's no way that you won't get to where you want to go. You just have to have the patience. That's all I have for you all.
That's perfect, man. That's a little bit of the theme of today's show, I think, was just like trying to get people to understand timelines. If you hang out with the right people, you're going to make your investors and yourself and your family and your bloodline a lot of cash, but be patient. So I love that, man. Cool, dude. This has been a blast, man. Thank you so much for coming back, dude.
Yes, appreciate it. Thanks so much for having me on.
It's been a blast, man. Enjoy your day.